Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
Much of an organization's cybersecurity efforts come together in its Security Operations Center, the SOC. Often these centers are government-owned and operated, or government-owned and contractor-staffed. For some of the best practices for SOC operations, the director of the Information Technology and Cybersecurity Team at the Government Accountability Office joins me in studio, Jennifer Franks. Ms. Franks, good to have you with us.
Great to be here.
Let's begin with a review of SOC type of work that you do, because cybersecurity is a bigger topic. SOC operation is a smaller topic, but it seems like a lot of cybersecurity activity for an agency would come together in the SOC.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of federal guidance that addresses what is needed to protect security of operation centers. And we actually had a report issued December 2023 that looks at federal agencies' information response procedures. And in that, we're highlighting that there's a set of guidance from various entities. So there was the Cybersecurity Executive Order 14028 that really does a broad sweep of enhancing security control operations in many different areas, but it really does enhance how government agencies need to secure their cloud-based infrastructures as well as their agency on-prem networks. There's also guidance that looks at zero trust operations from the OMB. And with the zero trust integration of things, we're looking at, again, continuous monitoring services and cloud-based security infrastructures. And then there's OMB's guidance that looks at federal incident response procedures, where we're focusing on not just incident response, but security event logging and log retention data. And all of those types of guidance really does feed into how we're better managing the data that we're managing that comes into the SOCs.
Right. So the data management becomes almost the object of SOC operations.
Absolutely. Because the data management and the protection of that data is critical for all of the agencies and their mission critical business services.
Right. So event information, network logs, and cybersecurity incidents are the object of cybersecurity themselves in some way.
Absolutely, they are.
So that gets to kind of a complicated layer of technology then that a SOC would need to have.
Yes, there is definitely a complicated layer, which then gets kind of complicated when we think about some of the automated processing that would help us to be a little bit more timely in some of our investigative services. One of the things that the guidance that we have been set forth to adhering to looks at information sharing as well. A lot of the SOCs, you know, they're are running short on the skill sets that is needed to withstand their own individualized SOCs across the many agencies. So being able to provide information sharing services across the various agencies, it will help with some of the visibility that's needed, as well as some of the investigative services. So once these various cybersecurity vulnerabilities and cybersecurity threats that are constantly evolving and plaguing us from around the globe, we would have that wherewithal to really share some of that capability across the globe, across our agencies, to really see and provide some of those information sharing capabilities a lot sooner so that we can, you know, be ahead of the curve in responding to the events as they occur.
So for the most part, then, agencies have not embraced a shared services model for SOC, have they?
Not necessarily. And it's because of the capabilities they already have, that they're short on resources, i.e. the staff, some are short on the monetary compartments of actually establishing some of those metrics that it's going to take for them to do that. And then some of them are really protective of the data that they have coming into their SOCs. You know, some agencies don't really have a high categorization of sensitive data, but others do. So they want to be protective of the data. So information sharing is a gradual advancement of SOCs, but they all see the need to definitely gradually share and have the visibility of the capability of sharing, because it will definitely help with some of the investigative services that are needed.
Yes, I would think that if I'm agency A, say a CFO Act level department, and I have a stack of technology I'm running, and just like the department down the street, we're both with Microsoft Teams, we're both in the cloud with the same cloud services provider using their productivity tools, and I would think that there's a lot in common. and therefore something showing up on one agency's network might be of interest to the one down the street that's running essentially a very similar stack.
100%, which would be very helpful for those agencies. Some of the difficulties in that lies, say, you did mention the CFO Act agencies. So say you have the Department of Education, but then you have the Department of Defense. So the Department of Defense, honestly, has its own network and its own set of criteria because the way it manages more national security intel-related data and the classification of their data is so much more sensitive than perhaps the Department of Education. So there are times where those entities may or may not want to share information-related data about the vulnerabilities that are impacting their environments, but we're looking at ways that we can do that in the near future so that, yes, we're not sharing sensitive-related information, but at least enough vulnerability-related data that would help those entities as well as others with similar related vulnerabilities that would just help us to remediate vulnerabilities a little faster.
Because you're sharing log data, and if there is an anomaly showing up, you don't have to share the data about what's going on in Iraq or something, DOD, with the Education Department, or, you know, HUD, better examples, maybe HUD and Health and Human Services, or Education and HUD, or whatever, maybe not Homeland Security. But you wouldn't, if you could just share that piece of information, hey, we're seeing this on this stack for this cloud provider, I would think they would jump to do that.
Absolutely. You have hit the nail on the head, and that is exactly what some of the vulnerabilities alerts that we receive. Even just this past week, we received a vulnerability alert from CISA to look at the Ivanti vulnerability, and we were able to directly go into our systems and services and remediate that weakness. Those are the types of shared services and information sharing that would be helpful across our various networks to see if you had that vulnerability and how it might have been impacting your information systems and the data that resides on those systems, and how quickly you were able to fix that vulnerability so that your downtime didn't impact your critical business needs as much as it could have had. You know, those types of things are really, really helpful in this environment.
And actually, what you say brings up another question is, to whom does the SOC report? And I imagine in your look across all of the agencies and the cybersecurity oversight role that you have, that probably varies. Maybe it reports to the CIO or to the CISO, who reports to the CIO, or maybe not. Every agency is a little different. And also the owners of applications, the business owners, sometimes need to be alerted because SOCs don't necessarily have the authority to shut down a system.
Yes, I love that you know so much about cybersecurity. You're like in our world. So, correct. The chief information security officers are usually the leads of security operations centers, who then directly report to the chief information officers. But you're absolutely right. Some agencies, the CIOs, are directly responsible for the SOC. It just depends on how the agency is structured. There are certain you mentioned the Department of Health and Human Services. They are a very decentralized agency that has many components and operating divisions. So there are many, a multitude of different security operations centers, lots of different CISOs and CIOs and different entities. So there's different reporting structures there. So it really just depends on the agency structure.
Yeah, it's probably hard enough to get FDA to talk to CMS or Coast Guard to talk to FEMA or something, let alone DHS to HHS or something like that.
It is, but they're working on it.
Right. And then within internally, the SOC then, what about the program owners, the business owners, who are the ones that are going to be shut down if there is a cyber incident?
Good question. So within the communication channel, when an incident or vulnerability occurs, when some thing needs to be patched, all of the data owners, the system owners, the business owners, we're alerted immediately. So for GAO, I do not manage the Security Operations Center, but I do manage some of the networks that reside in our Data Operations Center. So I mentioned—
You're sort of a hybrid.
I am a hybrid. I do a multitude of things for the agency. So knowing that I do manage some of the information systems within our network, when that latest vulnerability did impact us just last week, I was able to be you know, at the table immediately for what needed to be done with alerting all of the responsible parties, whether it was the application owners, the business owners, the data, and then the users that were going to be impacted, to be able to communicate with them how long the systems and services were going to be down while we remediated their vulnerability.
And who makes the decision to interrupt a system if there is a vulnerability or an attack that could be successful? Is it the business owner, or can the SOC ever do that?
For us, it was the CISO. So it was the SOC that made the decision. But we work with the SOC.
Right. So the SOC has to report up to its head, which is sometimes a confirmed, well, they're probably not confirmed, but they are, could be presidentially appointed, or it could be a political appointee that is the CISO. So, I mean, it's pretty high level that can actually stop a system.
Absolutely. Some agencies, that is a political appointee, but some of them are actually
career.
Career. Yes.
Got it. All right. But yeah, I just wanted to point out that distinction is who can actually say a system may stop. So it could be the top of the SOC, or it could be, depending on the situation, the agency. It has to be the business owner in some cases.
Correct. So me as the system owner, I stop the production of that system.
Right. Which implies there needs to be really ongoing continuous communication.
Continuous communication throughout the entire eradication and remediation process. So I was at the front end of the entire process. And when we were ready to go back online, I was able to make the call for it to go back online. And then we alerted the users that everything was cleared.
And getting back to the bigger issue of information sharing, I'm a little surprised that's not happening more widely because, I mean, at the establishment of Homeland Security itself in the post-9/11 era and the dawn of the modern cybersecurity era, which, I mean, computer security goes back to the 80s and 70s, 60s in some ways, but the modern era, there is supposed to be this collaboration and information sharing between the vertical pieces of government and the industries that they're connected with, energy sector, transportation sector, electrical sector, and so on.
Absolutely. So you mentioned the critical infrastructure sectors, and there are 16 sectors, and that is exactly the purpose of the sectors. And honestly, even though the sectors all have their different missions, like you mentioned energy and water and transportation and such, they all operate on automated information systems and services. So they all need IT and cybersecurity to functionally interoperate, right? So communicating and information sharing should be critical for them. Why we haven't been so good at it is because of trust. And it's a trust but verify sort of thing. And everyone has worked so compartmentalized in their various agencies, and they really haven't been made to really have to share. So with these new guidances that have come out in, you know, the last 2 years that are really strongly encouraging us to do so, more agencies are adopting it. So it's going to be just one of those things where we have to become more patient with the process. And as more vulnerabilities are actually impacting us from around the globe, people
sure
will get more comfortable.
So zero trust means Sally doesn't trust Harry at the same agency. It means zero trust is for the systems, but not for the people.
Basically.
Jennifer Franks is director of the Information Technology and Cybersecurity Team at the Government Accountability Office. We'll be back with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
In today's federal government, security by design is key to achieving the highest levels of security compliance. From security consulting and architecture design to comprehensive managed services, Maximus delivers end-to-end protection of critical data, systems, and operations. We are a trusted cybersecurity partner delivering cutting-edge solutions that enable government to securely operate in a digitally connected world, securing every aspect of your mission. Learn more at maximus.com/federal.
Welcome back to my interview with Jennifer Franks, Director of the Information Technology and Cybersecurity Team at the GAO. Our topic is Agency Security Operations Centers, SOCs, how they're changing, best practices for running them. And before the break, we were talking about information sharing. I want to switch now to the idea of who operates the SOC. Is this, in your experience, again, looking across government, strictly federal employees? Is this something that can be outsourced to industry with government oversight? What are some of the best practices you're seeing nowadays in actual operations?
So good question. It honestly depends on the agency and their operational capacity. And every agency, again, is different given their size, their mission complexity, and even their budget. So if it's a federal entity and they have enough staff, they might be able to have enough FTEs in-house to manage their SOC full-time. But most entities do have to hire some contractor support, especially if they need to have a 24/7 continuous monitoring of their security operations center. But regardless if the persons monitoring the SOC are federal employees or contractors, there are adequate contracting, security awareness training, role-based training. Honestly, there are rules of behavior that need to take place about how it is we need to regard those individuals who manage the SOC. And we outline all the training that is needed, and we follow suit whether they're federal FTEs or contractors. It just looks a little different. So if it's a contractor, we have a contract with that organization. And in that requirement, we set forth if you need a set of skills, maybe there's some certification requirements and certificates of whatnot. And we look at what's going to be useful for those contractors to be able to help us to better manage the network security controls, as well as the data regarding what they're managing for our networks.
Yes, because you have contractor people that are really at the heart of the crown jewels, if you will, and there's a great deal of just inadvertent problems that can happen, let alone nefarious problems, but that's probably a rare thing. And great. So what sorts of training might a contractor employee need that maybe the government person would have inherently, or is there anything like that?
Good question. So we might need to elevate certain security clearances for a contractor. If an agency has more sensitive data that the contractor may not be used to managing, we need to let that contractor service know the intricacies and the sensitivities about how they need to manage the data, what the data they are going to be seeing, and be able to then identify and notify certain individuals once incidents occur. Because there are different levels and criticalities of incidents. And once they occur, there is a reporting channel and there's a notification timeline. And those sorts of things will need to be trained for those individuals. Yes, we do those for the federal FTEs as well. But for contractors who may not know and be readily available with identifying with federal standards, we have to make sure that they understand. Also, for contractors, we want to make sure that they are providing additional safeguards on the data, that they're managing the data, whether it's on-prem for the agency or then overseeing the data as it's being transitioned into the cloud. We want to make sure that we have good, you know, oversight into the controls that they're, you know, handling in those types of situations.
I guess maybe an upside to this is that contractors that might have worked in other agencies could probably bring some fresh thinking into an agency that is now going to a contractor.
Absolutely. Some fresh thinking, fresh insights. They might have also seen or even helped to implement security controls and infrastructures in other environments that can then help another agency to upskill their environment, which is awesome, very, very good.
And when you mention certifications and so forth, there are kind of two classes of certification. One is you have learned from XYZ vendor university how to use their tool. And, you know, some of these are complicated, large programs, cybersecurity programs or routers and all of this, Cisco training. And then there's general management of cybersecurity that is agnostic of particular tools, let's say.
Yes.
And how do you balance that without ruling out almost everybody? What kind of certifications, what's a good blend of things for people to have coming into a SOC?
It honestly depends on the skill set that is needed for that SOC. Every individual, I mean, that's the biggest thing right now. Folks are going to get different certifications and certificates to really enhance their technical skill sets, their analytical proficiencies. But right now, there is a balance of whether you need perimeter-based or cloud securities, or if you need firewall protections. AI is new. There's just all types of certifications that you can get to enhance digital forensics. I mean, what's going to be needed is pretty much a conglomerate of different certifications to really enhance the skill set and the continuous monitoring efforts that is going to be needed to just round out the skills for your whole SOC team. So really just getting a wealth of some of everyone's skills is really what's needed. But there's no one set of certifications that's really highlighted more than the other.
And what about tools? Because when I hire a plumber, I don't give him my old pipe wrench to use. He comes with his own tools.
Own tools.
But do agencies generally want the contractor employees or the outsourced team for their SOC to use the federal-owned software tools? Or should the SOC operator, if you hire one to outsource, bring its own tools for you?
It depends on what that agency really needs. And if you even think about Zero Trust right now, as you mentioned earlier, all the agencies are aggressively attempting to meet OMB's requirements to implement some of the pillars of Zero Trust by the end of fiscal year 24. So we're aggressively trying to meet some deadlines. And what is helping us to meet some of those deadlines is already having some tools and critical services already established in our various environments. We just had to reconfigure the infrastructure to kind of revamp how these are presented within that Zero Trust mindset. But a lot of us did have to acquire new tools. But with that, no agency is going to adopt new tools and technologies without adopting the security controls that need to be evaluated, much like a security assessment plan, a privacy impact assessment, a risk assessment. So if we do hire a contractor and they're going to bring in their tools, we're going to have to assess that tools to be compliant for the needs for our environment. So we're going to look at the risk that that tool is going to bring in our environment. We're going to do some security assessments. We're going to do all the scanning that is going to be needed to make sure that whatever tool you're bringing into our environment is not introducing new risk, new threats, and is going to be suitable. So it's going to have to pass all of the controls to be available.
Yeah, so you really need a framework in place.
Absolutely.
To which to measure all of this, because even the tools, like you say, can backfire, as Ivanti did, as SolarWinds did. These things can simply, through no one person's fault, bring problems in.
Correct. No one person's fault. If it's connected to the network, it's not an if, it's a when. A cyber incident, a breach could inevitably happen. So providing those security control assessments, those risk management frameworks, and just having that assessment where you identify all of the likelihoods of events and being ready to respond should an event occur, then you have a plan in place.
Jennifer Franks is Director of the Information Technology and Cybersecurity Team at the Government Accountability Office. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
And to hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus on Federal News Network.
In today's federal government, security by design is key to achieving the highest levels of security compliance. From security consulting and architecture design to comprehensive managed services, Maximus delivers end-to-end protection of critical data, systems, and operations. We are a trusted cybersecurity partner delivering cutting-edge solutions that enable government to securely operate in a digitally connected world, securing every aspect of your mission. Learn more at maximus.com/federal.